Welcome to the Moving Past You radio show, a show about identifying, confronting, and embracing the obstacles that block and delay us in walking in our divine purpose. Each week, we delve into the complexities and rewards of walking in your purpose. Now, here's your host, Juanita Gaynor.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us on this evening. I'm so excited again. We are in season 4, rolling it out, making it do what it do. Just to know, I do know there's some issues with the Facebook stream, so I'll be fixing it on my end. Don't worry about it. They do know what's happening, but we are still moving forward. Go over to YouTube, go over to LinkedIn, go over to Twitter. At MPY Radio, you can see it while they're fixing the stream on Facebook. But enough said. Tonight, I have just amazing woman. I remember when we first had our initial conversation, she was such a blessing to my heart. And it made me comfortable in dealing with my own issues, with my own disabilities. And I knew immediately that she would be someone to not only share her story, but to share how she deals with things, what she's doing, and how she's walking unapologetically in her purpose. So tonight's featured guest will be no other than Michelle Steiner. She is a disability writer and educator, and we're going to be talking about living with a learning disability. Now, Michelle Steiner is a dedicated advocate, writer, and paraeducator with a strong focus on disability-related issues. She has a track record of contributing insightful articles to the prominent platforms, including the Mighty Nonverbal Learning Project, Deskalia Blog. I know I just butchered that. I'll have her clarify that when she comes on, because I know I butchered that, okay? The Reluctant Spoonie, Imagine the World as One Magazine, and The Word Gathering in her pursuit of promoting awareness and understanding. Michelle recently embarked on blogging endeavor, aptly named Michelle's Mission. That sounds beautiful. Additionally, her photographic talents have been showcased in Word Gathering and Independent and Work Ready. Professionally, Michelle is committed to her role as a paraeducator, providing essential support and guidance to students with disabilities within an educational setting. She resides in the U.S. and shared her life with her husband and the beloved kitties. I love kitties. They're cute and cuddly, cute and cuddly, cute and cuddly. So let's bring Miss Michelle on board. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
I am wonderful, Juanita. How are you today?
I am doing so well. Now, I'm going to ask a cool question. Can you clarify the article? Because I know I butchered the name. I practiced it and I still butchered it.
That's all right. It's dyscalculia or dyscalculia, depending on how you pronounce it.
Got it. So as I was telling everyone, you know, when we met and we talked, it's like, I'm gonna be honest, it was like I've known you for most of my life, because you were able to just speak to a comfort level that I had not been until I got much older to, you know, talk about, mm-hmm. you know, my challenges, you know, with learning or just attention and just overall, and how I was able to use that to, you know, definitely focus. So what I want you to do in this instance is, you know, tell the listeners and the viewers about your journey as getting to be to the advocate, and what has inspired you to do what you do?
Well, my journey began with a learning disability began in kindergarten. I was diagnosed at a very young age, and I was really lucky that they were able to find out that I had one. During this time that when I went to school, they were just had legislation that was passed prior, a couple years prior with that, So I was very fortunate that my teacher picked up on that I was struggling with reading, comprehension. I was also struggling with math and eye hand coordination. And they picked up on it, and they asked my parents for permission to get me tested for it. And sure enough, I have a learning disability. I have dyscalculia. But during that time, they gave learning disabilities as an umbrella term. And I also have visual perception issues and limited hand dexterity, but that wasn't diagnosed till I was an adult. And the next year, I had to repeat kindergarten in a new school in our district. And I also began to receive specialty instruction as well, where we worked on the reading, which was very slight. And we worked on math, or we attempted to do that. That didn't exactly work out the way that we wanted. And we worked on tying my shoes and just all the different things that I would need to be successful in the classroom. I spent my afternoons in kindergarten with regular ed peers. And the following year, I was in a regular first grade classroom for some of the time, but I also spent it a lot in learning support, just to give me that extra bit of help that I needed. And luckily, I was starting to be in more classes. I can remember with having supports, I can remember I was in science and social studies, I think by second grade. And I received the accommodations of extended test time and having the test read aloud to me. But school was a real struggle for me socially and academically. Academically, I struggled, but socially I struggled as well. I can remember when I was really young, the bullying began. I went to a very small school district that didn't value diversity. And they could see that I couldn't hide. They could see me go into learning support every day. And I quickly got labeled as the outcast or the one that wasn't very smart. And as a young child, I didn't get invited to a birthday party, or someone didn't want to be my friend or play with me on the playground. But as I grew, school got easier for me academically, but a lot harder for me socially when peer groups became more defined. Eventually, I was in all regular ed classes except for math and resource room. And my grades improved a lot. I made honor roll, and I was doing well in all my classes with having that support. And I knew that I wanted to go to college, but I was also afraid with my math difficulties. And also I was nervous about that with just how was I going to do in other classes as well, because there wasn't learning support classes offered at college. And I wasn't alone in this worry. I had a learning support teacher who said, "I don't think you can handle college because of your math disability," and recommended vocational schools instead. And nothing there interested me. And I decided I want to go to college. And I had a student teacher that was wonderful with encouraging me. She told me that I could go to college. And sometimes those are the words that I heard whenever it got really difficult. When I was at college, I was also hooked up with an agency called Office for Vocational Rehabilitation. They pay for testing. They also pay for all my years of school. I was able to graduate debt-free. And I can remember I had to get tested for a learning disability all over again. And the psychiatrist who tested me, I'm not a great test taker by any means, said that I was most likely not going to go beyond community college. And when I got to college, I had a professor who told me that my job choices would be limited. And I had a lot of peers that thought that disability accommodations were cheating, and I didn't use them. And that's something I really regret not doing, because my grades really suffered because of it. And after college, I was able to move out on my own. And I always wanted more for myself, though. I was working in some centers with students. And for financial reasons, I had to move back in with my mom and my dad. And I thought, this is the time for me to go back to university. And I found a program that had the least amount of math and science possible. And this was the service end of disabilities, rather than the teaching end that I majored in. And I went and I used the accommodations. I had a note taker. I had extended test time. And most importantly, I advocated for myself. And I can remember I was able to graduate with a bachelor's degree, despite a lot of people thinking that I could not do it. I was able to. And after college, it took a while to find the right job for me. I have been working for a school for about 12 years now, and I just love going into the classroom and making a difference for the lives of students that have disabilities. I think that's very rewarding to do that. And I also have gotten more involved with writing. Writing has always been really healing for me. And I can remember that was the first thing I found out that I was really good at. And I remember it was a story about a dinosaur, and my dad read it and said, this was really good. And that just encouraged me to write. And I even found friends in a writing group that I'm still involved with over 20 some years later. And I can remember I had a friend that told me, you should really write about having a learning disability. And I said, that's a little personal. I don't know if I want to talk about that. And I think I wrote some bad poetry and some other cringeworthy things that I definitely don't want to read aloud. Yes. And I can remember though, when I had that first article published on the Mighty about my struggle with opening up locks with limited hand dexterity, that was so freeing for me. I found that people wanted to hear my story, and where people weren't running away, they were running towards me and saying, that's my story. And that encouraged me to write more articles and to start a blog called Michelle's Mission. And the passion that I have behind what I do is my own experience with having a learning disability. I want to have this where I can encourage and empower and educate other people on learning disabilities and to be able to connect them. Because I think there's a lot of misinformation, number one, about them. A lot of people don't understand what that is. And they certainly, many people don't know what dyscalculia is. And just to be able to bring people together and so they don't feel like they're the only ones that have this as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Especially when it comes to writing. I think writing is this universal thing that everyone does at certain levels that gives them a level of comfort and a level of, you know, being seen. Because when you write, it allows you to put your emotions out there, but it talks back to you in a different way. It's not condemning. It's not, you know, hatred. It's, you know, it centers you into giving you the confidence that is needed to move forward. So it's like it helps with that communication and getting out there what you want people to kind of feel about you.
You know? It gives you that voice that sometimes that you don't have, or you don't feel comfortable maybe sharing with somebody else. You have that voice that you can share and be able to express what you're feeling.
Wonderful. Now, as I was, you know, looking you up and talking about the different platforms you've been featured on, how do you feel that your writing, as you've grown in it and today, how has it had a significant impact on, you know, the overall audience, but in particular, those that you serve?
I think a lot of times people will tell me whenever I have an article, that's my story, or I thought I was the only one that struggled with that. And then I got to read what people get to read what I have gone through or what I continue to have happen. And they feel that connection and they don't feel alone. And that gives them the verbiage to be able to educate themselves, but also other people as well.
And in regards to the blog, what is the overall goal for it? Is it to you maybe turn it into, and I'm just saying, like, you know, most blogs, people turn it into different, you know, retreats or whatever. Like, have you even thought that far regarding, you know, the overall purpose and long-term goal for the blog?
I think the overall purpose is definitely, I want to keep that education going for people with that. I also have another passion of mine is photography that I feature on my blog as well, where people can buy my artwork, because that is something I'll be able to, people have often said I bring out details that other people might miss in flowers. And sometimes I get that chance to take those pictures. If I'm in the car, I'll ask my husband, did you see that? And most of the time he's driving. He's getting a little better on this because I tell this story a lot. Lately, it's been like, hey, did you see this? Did you see that? But I get that chance to be able to find something and a flower or just something unusual. And I get to go back and take a picture of it. Sometimes we pull over and take that as well, if that's a possibility. And I try to incorporate some of that, like the metaphors with my writing about that. And I also, there's that store for purchase and I have a forum on there where people, I'll ask questions that are related to the theme of my blog and people can connect and talk that have disabilities. So I think the long-term goal is definitely to be just a place where people that can be connecting that have disabilities and to provide that information. But that is a great idea with having retreats or workshops. That's definitely something to consider.
No. Count me in, of course. And so as you were talking about, the photography and the artwork, I like to think that our unique abilities, because, mm-hmm. I don't think, before we had other words to say for it, people considered it to be a hindrance or whatever. But our unique abilities, it's like it's able to pull out details and see things that other people mm-hmm. don't see. How have you used that in your artistry to pull those things out, to tell a story or to give life to something that you are writing or, teaching to students?
A lot of times I like to use metaphors to describe things. Sometimes I might describe a metaphor if I'm talking about the process of a flower blooming, when I'm talking about just maybe how I've accepted my disability. Or I talk about the sweetness of finding sweetness with the disability. And I will take a picture of a bee and on a flower, and I get to kind of compare that. I think that's definitely one way that I do that. And I just try to bring out that having a disability, there's definitely some things that are really hard with that, but there's also a lot of beauty in that. And I hope that I can bring some of that beauty with my photography too, just to be able to illustrate just some of the goodness that can come out of it.
Okay, wonderful. And with you working with students, mm-hmm. And I was saving this like for later, because in working with students, how do you work with the parents to help them to, or educate the parents to help them to understand that what the children, their ability is unique. It's not something that's a hindrance or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you help other parents navigate maybe how you wish somebody helped your parents navigate when you were younger?
One of the ways I get that chance to do that is through a lot of the speaking engagements with podcasts. I have had that opportunity where I can give advice to parents not to give up on their child. That's a big thing because my parents didn't give up on me. And I'm able to also do that through articles with just providing that education for them as well.
Okay. So in this moment, what I would like for you to do is maybe give one or two points, or however you may feel, comfortable with doing, because we do have the time, with a parent who maybe their child has just been diagnosed and they feel frazzled, they feel like they're lost, and they feel like all is just whatever. Like, what can you speak into them to help them, to guide them to their children's and their next step for their education?
The first thing I would definitely tell that parent is that it's going to be okay. And I know that right now a lot of that information is really overwhelming, but just take it one step at a time and to really work with the school or whoever diagnosed your child and just be able to find as much information as you can about that and to really reach out for support and see what resources are available. And talking with parents that maybe have already been through that journey themselves and might have an older child or even an adult with that disability can really help.
Okay. And now I'm going to shift it to adults. What would you say to an adult who may have known that they had an issue or felt something was different, but was diagnosed later in life and now feel like they're just kind of lost as to what to do? What would you say to them to kind of help them, you know, navigate their, you know, their, what I call their new superpower?
Yeah. So, exactly. Sure. The first thing I would tell an adult that might just be newly diagnosed is to find out as much information as you can as possible, because having that knowledge is power. And I also think it's really important that you also can focus on not just what you can't do, but to focus on what you can do. For me, it's so much more empowering for me to focus on reading and photography and writing rather than focusing on things that are really hard for me, like math or visual perception. And that just really helps to focus on what you're good at and to know your disability, and also to learn how to advocate for yourself.
And what could you offer to them in advice regarding self-care? And I ask this because as when I got older and really began to lean in and accept my ADHD diagnosis, among other, you know, other things that I have going on with PTSD and depression and things like that, there was some things that I wish somebody kind of had helped me with when I had learned about the ADHD. It kind of clicks now and it helps. And I know what triggers me, but what can you offer in advice to, for those, you know, finding, for the parents and for the adults to find a level of self-care or routine to help the child with the child or the adult rolling through just basic daily tasks? Cause sometimes that can be overwhelming still. As for me, who is, I will be 49, I still sometimes struggle. Like I have those days where I'm overwhelmed and overstimulated. So what can you offer to those parents and to those adults who've been diagnosed, who are still trying to navigate how to get to a good place or a routine?
I think one of the first things that really helps me is definitely getting up early in the morning. That's definitely something, and checking the calendar, because that helps me to see what I am doing for the day. And sometimes I have to go back and say, oh, what time is that? Or when am I meeting, or something to that regard. So that kind of, if having that preparation really helps me know what I'm going to be facing, that's definitely helpful. I think also just making the time for the things that the person loves to do is also really important too. You know, I love to read, I like to work out, and I love writing, and just making sure that you're taking that time for that and using those as rewards too. That, okay, if once I get this done, then I have so much time to do something that I really enjoy doing as well.
Reward systems. I function on reward systems.
Yeah.
I really don't care what no one says. And sometimes a lot of the things is like, okay, I know if I finish this, I can get in my bed and go to sleep and I don't have to do nothing else. That's a reward system for me. And so sometimes that'll help me push on. But can you speak to them for the days where you're just like, you know what? I just don't want to. And is it okay? Because I've learned for it to be okay. But for those, sometimes I think parents and specifically may feel guilty because they think that they're not doing all that they can do for their child. And some days they may be tired and the child may be tired. Can you speak to them with some type of encouragement or, you know, just to let them know that it's okay, you know? And they can hear from me, but they can, let's hear from a professional. Because you're a professional.
Sometimes even the best laid plans don't always work out. And there's just days where sometimes we just have to take that time to relax and kind of review. And that's okay sometimes to take that time to be able to take a day off here and there. It's just making sure that they're eventually brought back in for what they need. And I always love to say at work, there's never a typical day. And sometimes with working with students, we just have to sometimes just go with the flow and sometimes just go with and just manage the situation that is happening around us, and that it's okay. And sometimes whenever it goes off plan, it turns out to be a lot better anyways.
Wonderful. And so as you're working in the education field, what changes or significant changes are you seeing with, you know, the education, with, you know, medicine, with therapy? What changes are you seeing that are now possibly coming down the pike or being implemented to help, you know, students and teachers with this and to make it more, I should say, more so recognized and acceptable, so it's not looked at as some like second off thing?
Right. What I see a lot of now is a lot of early intervention. We're more well aware of students that might have disabilities or might just be in the classroom and they just aren't thriving, and there might be something that's going on, and we have services that we can intervene definitely in preschool. And there's even some that do right birth to three. So there is a lot more that we have that we can look in on child development. And that way, if a parent has a concern or a question, there's a lot of resources that are out there that the parents can utilize. I also see in the schools, there's more speech therapy, and now they have occupational therapy, physical therapy that are in some of the schools. And a lot of times we see children that come in that have trauma in addition to that. And we have counselors that are professional that can see the students right in our building. And I think that is definitely some improvements that we've seen.
Okay, that's awesome. And for me, trauma is really key because I was a child of trauma. And so with the children that you work with, how many of them, you know, and I'm not asking for just, you know, statistics, but what do you see how a lot of them, their disability correlates a lot with the trauma that they suffered?
A lot of times we will see kids that will come in and they might be having what we would say a bad day, or they would come in, I'm not going to do my work, or I'm doing this, or they're upset. And you might have thought, oh, that's just a kid that's being defiant. And sometimes when we go down, we say, it sounds like you're having a really hard day. And then they're able to tell us that maybe a family member is in jail, or maybe that somebody is in rehab, or a parent has passed away, or there might be a divorce, or even something, not to downplay this, but their pet might have passed away. And all of those things just really add up, and it can make it really difficult for them to be able to learn if they're dealing with trauma at home for many different reasons. And they might come to school hungry, and they might come to school just really tired because they didn't get a chance to rest. And until we are able to really go in and try to address those issues, we can't even get to learning. And so sometimes then that's been a big thing that we see a lot of.
Right. And I just know also as a child who was a trauma, if home wasn't great or whatever, you know, I just wasn't functioning. But unfortunately for me, when I was coming up, you know, that was just like, it didn't matter. Like, you need to get it together. You need to, you know, snap on board. So I'm excited to hear that as, you know, time has changed, that they're incorporating a lot more of those things to help, you know, students get through and to be able to properly learn. So it's like they're feeding the whole, they're dealing with the whole person instead of just one aspect of it. And so that does give my heart great joy. And so in this realm, in this avenue, as you, you know, you've been progressing, where do you ultimately see yourself, you know, being in this grand scheme of things? Like, you know, where do you see yourself, you know, I would say this time next year? I don't believe in doing the 5 and 10 year things because I can change my mind in 5 minutes. So I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. But, you know, and about this time next year, as you see, you know, your platform's growing, as you're seeing, again, more and more people are talking about, you know, various learning, you know, disabilities, mental health issues. How do you see your role in positioning when it comes to bringing more awareness to us and teaching and education of this to others?
I would definitely love to increase the blog with that education as well. With the forum, that's definitely something that I would love. With the store, with my artwork. But I'd also like to get back into maybe more in-person speaking events too. And just more definitely speaking on this too is wonderful as well. But I just want to be able to reach as many people as I possibly can and try to help as many people as I can as well.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you said that because it segues into a question. With COVID, now we're on the outskirts. We're coming out. It's shifting from pandemic to endemic. This is a twofold question. The first question is, how did you see COVID impact those children, and how? Because I can just only imagine that it may have set some of them back. Mm-hmm. And how have you been able to begin to work in that environment and work to get them to a better spot? Let me start with that one first.
Sure. One of the things that we have seen definitely is a lot of social skills that can be really hard because some of our students have spent a lot of time in front of a computer screen. Yeah. And we also have seen academically that a lot of our students are behind as well because they had that time where they weren't in school. And there was also that time where they were learning remotely. And that really has been hard, especially on students that have disabilities. So one of the things we're doing is, we're definitely trying to do educational intervention things in school where we work on some of those skills with them academically to get them back up to speed. And we're just trying to meet the child where they're at and trying to provide that social interaction. And a lot of it's modeling, though, with the staff, too, and the peers. Sometimes we will come up to them and have conversations to just show how we interact with each other.
Okay. And so with that, too, how the parents... Like how did, because of course, this is out of their realm. Like this isn't their thing, wheelhouse. How did that, also affect, students and what you guys had to come back and do to kind of, is what I say, put them back at possibly baseline because they were probably good. What did you do to work with the parents to probably get them, not only the parents at baseline, but the children as well?
Right. A lot of times it was hard for parents. I mean, I had a friend that knew I was a para and she goes, I felt like I was doing your job with trying to be home. And I think it's just providing the support with the families of what they needed and just reaching out to them and just providing those resources so they could be able to get through that as well. And also just sharing with parents, definitely what they needed when their child went back to school too. And just trying to have that bridge between the family and the school is so important.
Now, I am an introvert. I like to be in the house. I like to be in whatever. But one thing I did realize during the pandemic was, even though I was an introvert, to be told that I couldn't go somewhere. And I realized that sometimes me going out the house or going to an IKEA or whatever, it got me off the ledge, and not having that, I found myself on the ledge a lot of the times. I would like for you to talk to the viewers and the listeners about why is this important to have physical interaction when you're dealing with mental health, learning disabilities, and things like that, because there's a purpose behind it. But I think you could probably better articulate why that's needed and why we have to maybe really think through plans moving forward to be able to accommodate that in a grander scheme.
I think having that connection is really important, especially with other people that have disabilities. Sometimes it's really easy to get stuck in your own head and you think, oh, I'm the only person that struggles with that. And there's other people that have that as well. And I think that is whenever I get that chance to meet in groups with other people that have disabilities, sometimes we'll be able to talk, and they might have had the same problem that I did. And I'm always amazed, like, oh, I thought I was the only one that struggled with that. And a lot of them think the same thing. And sometimes we're not able to maybe fix somebody's situation, but we can be there for the person and offer suggestions and offer advice. And then it's always interesting to see how that comes to fruition when you meet with somebody on a regular basis. And just some of the opportunities that did come up with having COVID, of being able to meet online and to have that is important. But I also think I definitely missed a lot of the in-person things as well. And it is nice to go back and be able to see family and friends and have that social interaction. And even with other people who don't have disabilities, but it's still being able to share that and just having that connection is so important.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I would never, well, I'm publicly admitting it now. There's sometimes I do like to go out. There is, you know, and, you know, even though I don't like to be around too many or whatever, but again, right. It does help to be around people for the limited time that I can take it. Cause then I don't get overwhelmed. But I can see why for me personally, it was like, you know, I still had to kind of go into the office, and even though it was maybe one or two people, I still had some complete, you know, some interaction and things like that. So I can just only imagine how, you know, people who had to be home completely or didn't have any assistance or, you know, I'm just thinking of the parents who not only had to work,
right,
and then they had to, it was like they were playing double and triple roles, or some parents, only one parent was able to work remote. The other one still had to report in, you know, so I can just imagine how that, you know, was. And then a lot of the kids are getting back in and they are behind.
Definitely. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of kids that are behind on that. And we're just trying to do the best we can to serve and just meet them where they're at and hopefully be able to move forward.
Yeah. So before we go into the final part, you as an educator, I want you to give you just a few seconds just to speak with everyone who sends parents to schools or whatever. Like, what do you guys need as educators, you know, working in the schools and things like that? What are the graces you need? What are the support that you need to kind of just not only for you guys' own mental health, but to make sure that the children are learning at their optimal best? Like, how can the general population, most parents should know, but how do we, you know, support and really help, you know, yourself and other educators? Because you guys are in crucial roles, whether people want to believe it or not, you're in crucial roles. And then top it on the fact that we have our own unique other issues or traumas or learning things ourselves on top of it, and we're helping others. So how can we support yourself, you know, teachers like yourself and others with everything that you got going on to make it better?
I definitely think just having that appreciation and that just having that respect, and also being willing to work with us when we do have, when you're when we have a student that comes in, and being able to have that relationship with us in the family, and just to be able to move forward with that the best that we can do. And so we can provide those services for them.
Wonderful. So now I know we were talking about some things that you got going on. and you were telling me earlier about this amazing book anthology that you're a part of. And so what I want to give you is I want to give you some time to really talk about that project, what it meant to you, and possibly how we can find the book on itself.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. Earlier this spring, I had three of my stories published in a book called Rediscovering Your Story, and it is available for purchase on Amazon. And I went to a workshop last year where people had that chance to write about different experiences that they had, and we were able to put them in a book. And some of the prompts were fun. I can remember one was we wrote stories about our hair and that process. And I can remember one of them was the greatest lesson that you learned. And we even wrote about our favorite place. And some of the people in the group, they had issues with mental health. Others had substance abuse issues that they had as well. And I talked to main. I did not struggle with those issues, but I was able to speak about having a learning disability. And it was just amazing to be able to be a part of that project.
Wonderful. And definitely we'll make sure that that link is in the show notes and on the website so that people can go and support. So if other people want to find out more about you, find out more about your artwork, how can they get in touch with you? How can they find you?
Sure. You can find me at my blog, michellesmission.net. And I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Awesome. And then, of course, you know, if you have any issues, whatever, you can go to the site, movingpastyou.com. You will see all of Michelle's information there, as well with the show notes and stuff like that, and of definitely how to get the book as well. So as we begin to wrap up, what maybe three things you can leave to people, takeaways that you can give to the listeners and the viewers today on how not only can you, you know, move through this, but you can use it and thrive and help others get through it as well.
Well, one of the first things I would tell somebody is to know what you want. I mean, that's definitely something that's very important, to know what you want and to be able to find a way to do it. And I often thought about my own disability as being something that was a burden. And I wondered what good could ever come out of it. And little did I know that it was going to be a blessing, not only for myself, but for other people. And once you find what you want and you find a way to do it, I think it's really important to find a way to help others as well with it.
That is so amazing. Michelle, I want to thank you for taking out the time to be with us on this evening. Again, your story is so inspirational and how you work with little people. I mean, little people are my heart. You know, I wish I heard the pre-conversation beforehand we was having about little people, but y'all be a later.
Yes.
But I want to just thank you for your continued work with working with young people, working with, you know, adults regarding learning disability, and how you've persevered and continue to persevere and being a champion for the cause. I definitely look forward to collaborating more with you. And as we talk about this further, because again, this isn't something that is talked about or celebrated. And we want to make sure that that is no longer done. So I thank you so much for being on with us on this evening.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Well, you're welcome. Now, for everyone who's on Facebook, this will re-show as a preview. Something was going on with Facebook, and I've gotten messages. I get it. It's a Facebook issue. We will make sure right after we're done with the live show, I will make sure that it's going to re-show on Facebook so that you can see it. Okay. So we do know. But again, thank you so much for being on the show, seeing us show this evening. Next week, we have a Miss Danielle Ross, and she is going to be talking about Yet Guy. And I am just blessed at what she is going to bring to you on next week. She reminds me of me, and it is just the sweetest. Her testimony is everything. And so definitely come and see us on next week. Be blessed. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. And you know, we're going to be here next Friday, 7 p.m., same time, same location. And hopefully Facebook will be nice to us and actually cooperate. But until then, have a great evening. Thanks for joining us this week on the Moving Past You Radio Show. Make sure to visit our website at www.movingpastyou.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you found value in the show, rate us on iTunes or simply tell a friend about the show. And be sure to tune in next Friday for our next episode. And remember to always be kind in your word, your thought, and in your deed. Be blessed. Yeah.